Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome back to the Handmade Podcast, episode 51. Don't worry, guys. I know you thought we might have been gone forever after episode 50, but we had some scheduling issues last week, but we are back. So what's going on? Well, you thought you were done. You might have been. You were ready to kick in, throw in the towel, I think.
Oh, he was thrilled.
No, I mean you, Derek.
Me?
No. Yeah.
I was done. Yeah. I was laid up done.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm feeling better this week, but I'm not good. I think I'm going to be out of work for a little while. It's funny, a lot of people think I'm, kind of just trying to drag this no work thing out, but it's anything but that. I'm pretty dumb, but I'm not that dumb. But, it was the craziest thing. I think I was telling Paul yesterday, what shocked me was, like, how it happened. Like, nothing in particular
nothing major,
ever
right?
happened. Yeah, like, it just woke up one day like that, and I'm like, it's nerve-wracking to think that that can happen. I mean, something must have happened at some point along the way, but, I mean, and this was, like, just something I couldn't even, you know, work through. It was, like, debilitating. Like, I couldn't even get out of bed, you know? I mean, I would get out of bed, but, you know, then if I was sitting down, I couldn't stand up. If I was standing up, I couldn't sit down.
So, and this was in your lower back, right?
Yeah,
just for anybody that wasn't
following along
on Instagram.
Yeah, just right at the base of my spine. It wasn't, like, muscular. Like, my back wasn't sore, my upper back, nothing like that. And, then it's, you know, a week to get an appointment. And, you know, I got desperate, and I was just like, I got to see somebody. So, you know, last week I got a couple injections in the base of my spine. And it's funny how many people reached out to me. Oh, my God, I've been dealing with this for 25 years. And
I don't want to hear this,
you know. And
one side of your back, or is it like right
in the
middle?
It's more the right side. But it's right in the middle, but it's more right than left, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's, like I said, it's just, the strange part is it's just so sore, like you can't do anything. It's not even a matter of, like, powering through it. It's just you can't do anything. And, that's why I'm in the shop a lot, just kind of rummaging around and stuff like that, because it's just I can't sit for long. I can't drive. You know, I can drive a little bit, you know, and that sucks because I'm supposed to be doing a little bit of a road trip down to Pennsylvania next weekend, and that's, like, up in the air. But, I'll get through it. It'll be fine, you know, I'm sure, but it's just a pain in the ass. It's just literally, it's just tough to get answers from anybody, and,
nobody has answers. I mean, I feel like 90% of people with back pain, you go in and they're like, we give you do a little bit of this, but nobody really tells you, like, this is going to fix you.
You got to get some stem cells.
Yeah.
For real. Go to Tijuana.
I've been checking my shop. I'm totally out of stem cells. I have duplicates of everything down here except stem cells.
I was going to say, you didn't find any in like the back corner with the post vice and all the other bullshit that you have down there?
I found something I thought was a stem cell, but it wasn't. But it's just funny. I'm just going through like the stuff. I'm like opening up drawers and I'm like, oh, Jesus, I forgot I even had this. And it's like, you know, just the amount of stuff, it's just ridiculous, like those screw guns. And it's funny because a lot of people like, you know, oh, why would you use those? It's like those things are, you know, 20 years old. You know, that's what people used to do back in the day. Like, you know,
yeah,
they didn't use battery operated, you know, screw guns. Like, that's what you use for drywall, you know. And
I remember I was doing a job once with a guy and he's like, oh, do you have a screw gun for drywall? And yeah. I was like, I don't know. Like, I just said yes. I've always used a small impact for drywall, or a drill.
Yeah.
So I show up at this job, and he's like, "Where's your screw gun?" I'm like, "Here." And he's like, "No, that's not a screw gun."
Yeah,
he's like, "That's not a drywall gun." I'm like, "What the fuck do I
need
a drywall gun
for?" How do you use an impact for drywall?
Hmm?
How do you use an impact for drywall? Oh,
a dimpler on it. Yeah. Well, the whole thing with drywall is like you just want the screws in as fast as you can.
But you can't sink the screw. You can't sink the screw too much, or else you break the paper.
Break the paper, a dimpler tip is a. It's like,
yeah, they make a special tip.
It's basically the Phillips tip sticks out like an eighth, so that when there's a collar around it, so that as you're putting in the screw, the collar hits the drywall, and the tip will basically just push itself away. But now, you know, now I have a collated screw gun, you know, like with the bandolier.
Oh,
screws.
I got one of those too. Yeah.
Yeah,
that one
which
I'll
is
keep.
Like. That's what you need, you know.
But I mean, if you watch somebody that does it for a living,
oh my god, it's crazy!
Like they don't shut that thing off; it just goes boom, boom, one after the other.
I saw a TikTok video of some guy drywalling. He had extension cord tape like strapped to his waistband on the back of him with a little router with a little bit,
and
a holster,
the drywall
and then his
router.
Drywall gun in the other hand, and he was up on stilts and.
Yeah.
He was flying through the drive. It's so crazy to watch
It's amazing because people think, like, you know, they're measuring stuff.
No.
The guys that do it, they just cover the whole wall
and
cut everything out and throw everything out, you know, the scraps. But when I first started doing construction, I used to work with this guy, and he would, like, was dead against screw guns. He hammered everything.
Yeah.
And this guy, his lips would be blue from the blue nails. He'd just have a mouthful of nails. And he could hammer that thing faster than you could screw it. It was unbelievable. He literally would pull it out of his mouth, set it once, boom, drive it one shot. Just it was amazing to watch this guy just swinging his hammer like one shot. But
I worked with a guy. They would nail the edges of all their drywall and then screw the field.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like we were doing a basement. I'm like, because so like the screws will break the edge of the paper, and they say it'll cause more cracks.
Yeah,
but now you got fiber tape. You know, like it's not the same.
Yeah, it's a different game now.
And I'm like, and also too, like screws hold drywall to the ceiling better than nails do.
Oh yeah.
I don't give a shit who you are.
Yeah.
And we're like the guys arguing. It's so much harder to nail
drywall
overhead.
I was gonna say, if you ever tried to nail drywall to a ceiling,
sucks.
Man,
it sucks.
God.
And I'm like fighting with this dude. I'm like, guy, like you know, this is just a waste of all of our time.
Yeah.
You know, like I understand this
dude,
is the way you do
plug
things.
So many holes in the ceiling. If you're trying to nail it, I remember when I first started, man. Every like corner, I'd break it like in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
It'd just be the guy I work with. He hated me. He just. It's just so much work you make for yourself, you know. And
that's
it just,
so funny.
And then I would just load up the joint compound. That's like the other thing. Like now they got fast dry joint compound. Like back then it was just, you know, you mixed it. It came dry in a bag, you know. It was just
the good old days.
Oh yeah.
I hate painting so much that I would drywall. I hate are painting and drywall, but I would drywall every day before I would become a painter.
Really?
I can never become a painter. Forget that.
Yeah. I hate it. I'm not stoned enough to be a painter. That's always what I said.
I don't mind painting. I hate the prepping for painting.
I'm a
good painter. Like I don't tape anything. I don't have to do that. But
can't
all that sucks. And that's what a couple people messaged me. They're like, well, when are you ever going to drywall again? It's like, I used to do a lot of this stuff, but, like, mm-hmm. part of me thinks, like, I have, like, two rooms in my house I should probably do over.
Yeah, and also, too, eventually you're going, like, to get a new house, right? You're going to move, or you're going to buy a new house, shop or a house.
I'm not touching a thing. If I cannot buy a house that I don't even want to have to paint it. I'll change, like, the doormat going in or something. Other than that, I'm done. I'm not doing the thing. I'm past that. There's no way I could. It just wouldn't be worth it, you know? I don't know. It just wouldn't be worth it to do, but...
Can't do it.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it, so...
Yeah, we'll see you... We'll see you in a new basement someday. Drywall.
I'm just like... No. Please, no. But, I just, like, that would be my worst fear, is to, like, move out of here and just have to, like, do work to a new house. I just, I look at this house. I need so much work done here, and I can't even bring myself to do that, you know? I got, I have this post out front that needs to be, like, fixed. It's got, like, some rotted wood, and I go, I get the Total Boat had sent me the two-pot, like, wood rot stuff, and I'm like,
it's like a converter?
I'm like, I'll do this another time. I'm like, it was a perfect day out yesterday. It was like 75 out dry. It's like, when am I going to do it? You know, just I just don't want to do anything anymore, you know. So, that's my story.
That's how I feel about my house, but I haven't finished a lot of things on my house, so.
Well, it's hard. Like, once you live in it, it's so hard. Like, my third floor, we ripped out the rug in the hallway because the dog decided to use it as a toilet.
Nice.
And so that's that.
Lovely.
And then, so there's nothing on the floor. And then my bedroom needs a new floor. But it's like, trying to explain to my wife, like, where are you putting this king size bed? Like, you know what I mean? Like, the other rooms up here, they need to be done too. So now we're going to play, like, musical rooms. And we're going to go from one room to the other. It just mentally, I'm like, I'm so checked out. I was just like, I can't do that. You know, I don't know how. Like, maybe when we move out, we could do it or something. I don't know.
Go live somewhere else for a while.
Yeah, but then, like, do I pay somebody to move everything? I'm not moving everything. My kids aren't gonna help me. You know, it's like, So, but they're gonna be gone in the fall. That everybody will be back in school or just out of the house. So, you know, maybe then we could do it. But
you'd be empty nesting. Like,
Yeah. I can't wait. I mean,
it's exciting.
I've been waiting 24 years for this. Good things come to those who wait. No, I love my kids, but they gotta go. One of my posts I wrote, somebody wrote, like, what's your favorite something? I forget what it was. I said, like, kids, they're all my favorite, but at some point, you know, you gotta let them go. You'll see.
Yeah, I know. One of these days.
Paul's mother's like the exception. She never wants little Paul to leave.
No.
Well, it's funny.
Most
I think
parents want them gone.
My mom like wants us gone, but at the same time, like as soon as I get 10 feet away, she's like, oh, I have like 10 things I need for you to do. I'm like, great.
Yeah.
I'm like, so what happens when I like move far away?
Yeah.
She can just call me and complain about it.
Yeah, that's what they do.
That's right.
That's why what my first daughter, that's why she moved far away, because it's like they just don't want to be close by. You get dragged into everything.
Yeah.
What have you guys been up to?
Well, Paul, do you want to talk about what you just bought, or are we saving that for next
time?
No,
I'll talk about it. So,
Paul had an exciting day yesterday.
Exciting day. I went down to Chris's shop. To go purchase a
there was some mopping that needed to be done and some water to be removed. So
before you get to that, did you physically go in the shop?
I did. It was a challenge.
Weird.
I had to jump over
sandbags. You have a lot of anxiety.
I had to, you know.
Well, he said, "What did you say? It's like a World War I trench."
Yeah, I said
it's
like
two layers
in the trenches.
Of sandbags.
Yeah, foxholes.
But the shop actually isn't that bad. It was in pretty good shape.
No, it was clean, but it is packed.
I know.
That's
it's
what
bad.
Louis said. He's like, "Holy shit!" He doesn't even know.
What are you gonna do?
So I went down with my friend Louis, who knows everything about cars, and we went and checked out this 19. I thought it was a 51. I thought it was a 50. I couldn't, because I don't know what I'm talking about. I thought it was a 51 F100 Ford because of the grill. I guess 51s and 52s have that same grill. But it says on the title it's a 53, but it's an F3. But it has that grill, which I like better. It's my favorite Ford grill. So it's like a little bigger truck. It's got an 8-foot bed. It's in really good condition. The cab is in great condition. The frame's perfect. It's not rusted. It came from California.
Got extra. Did you bring it home, or did you
no.
bring it on the trailer, or is it still down there?
It's still there. I got some of the like small parts that he had, like the extra parts. And I'm gonna go maybe like Monday or Tuesday, Chris, and
but not tomorrow. Next Monday.
Next Monday. We're gonna go down with the trailer, grab the extra motors, grab the truck, and bring it back. And then I guess I'll start working on it. Louis said he wants to get it running, just to see if the motor fires up, and then we'll take the whole thing off the frame, sandblast the frame, powder coat it. I gotta do something with the bed, because like I was telling you guys, the beds, I don't know if it's worth. I don't think you could really fix it, because the bed rails, but those are like literally 2 or 3 panels that you can buy online.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They have everything. Like, if you go on all these different websites, they reproduce every single panel, cabs, fenders, bed rails, the steps.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. So there's no shortage of parts for these trucks.
Yeah, that's like when Jimmy was doing the work on his truck. Like, he just was ordering everything online.
Yeah.
You know, that was newer, but still, it's an older truck. And, you know, they just stamp it all out. It's amazing what you can get, you know?
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it worked out good. So the backstory is my next-door neighbor here at the shop is he's more like a Porsche aficionado. He's a Porsche collector, and he's got – I don't remember. Maybe he talked to you, Paul, about the one that's in his garage. What's a 927? Is that what it was?
Oh, shit. I don't even know.
He has a very rare Porsche. It's not, like, particularly beautiful.
No.
I mean, it's a nice-looking car, but it's not the typical Porsche shape that everyone thinks of when they think of, like, a 911.
I feel like it's that Porsche that was kind of, like, known as, well, I don't even – I might be wrong on this, but there's some Porsches that are kind of, like, not shitty, but, like, they weren't like super expensive, but he was saying there's something different about this one. Like, it's got a much bigger motor. It's like a special edition of that model. I forget what the model was.
He told me there were only 4,000 made, and there's only 1,000 left, like, in existence.
Yeah, so it's got to be big money.
It's super rare, and so, but he has a bunch of beautiful like 911s that are like gorgeous, like dream Porsches. So anyway, a couple of years ago, he bought this farm truck. And the story that he told me, and is the same story I think he told you guys, you know, he has sons that don't care about the Porsches at all. Like, he says, he's like, I have these, like,
that's
race cars, we have quads. He goes, my kids don't care about them at all. He goes, we went out to Montauk, and we see this old farm truck, and the kids, like, wouldn't stop talking about it. They, like, loved it. They loved the old farm trucks. They thought they were so cool. He's like, so I found this one on eBay. He bought it. He figured him and his kids were going to work on it together. But then his kids got a little older. They got into, like, sports, so... It's been sitting basically like within view of my shop door for, I don't know, 4 years since he bought it. And every time Paul comes down, he asks me about it. And I finally asked the neighbor, and the neighbor said, you know what, you know, I would sell it. And I kind of gave him a little bit of Paul's story. I, you know, told him he was like a young guy like me. He was going to restore it. It was, you know, something that he'd wanted, and that he was going to do it right. And he was like, all right, like, you know, tell him I would sell it. So... It just happened to work out. It was perfect,
yeah, it was perfect.
When you got to and I trust the guy. He's like a super nice guy. And,
yeah.
And like what I was saying to Paul was, you could tell that the restoration he was going to do was going to be the right restoration. So he bought the right shit. You know, like whatever parts he gave you were like the right thing. So he's excited. He's excited to see it done. He told me he wants to. He wants to keep track of it. And
yeah.
I said one day I'm sure he'll. He'll get it finished, and he'll bring it down, and you can see it. And he actually sent me videos of it running. Paul, I just sent one to you.
Oh, cool. Because
he did get it running, but he only got it running off of, like, a funnel putting fuel into the carb because he had to replace the gas tank. But it sounds good in the video. I don't know. It's, you know, I'm excited to see you get started on
it,
Paul.
Cool.
That's going to be a really – that'll be a vehicle you have for the rest of your life. I mean, like,
I know.
You know, you and your dad will be able to work on that. And he can watch.
He can watch, he can come check it out for a couple minutes, and
he can run to the
before,
store
before he gets hurt. Yeah. Yeah.
He can go and get lunch and stuff like that.
He can push it if it ever breaks down.
Yeah. I'm super
excited
though.
For you, man. That's really cool, and it'll be weird not to see it in my driveway.
Right? I didn't even know why I never looked at it closer. I'm like, I always looked at it. I'm like, huh, I wonder what that is, and I never bothered to like look under the tarp. And then when you had your open house, I'm like, you know what? Let me look at this freaking thing. And I saw that grill. I'm like, oh my god, this is the one I want. And Louis had this exact truck. Well, not this exact. He had an F100, I think, which is like slightly smaller, but same flathead motor. He's worked on a bunch of flatheads before. But those are pretty cool, like how they work. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever like researched like the Ford flathead motors. They're really interesting. They're basically like big lawnmower engines. Like, they're super simple. And
You were explaining it.
Like, the valves are like down in the block. It's literally the heads are just one piece of like cast iron. There's like nothing in them, you know. So like the exhaust and the fuel like's got to go up and around and then down into the cylinder. So they're not like super efficient or powerful, but they're really simple to work on, and they're like a classic hot rod engine. Like, people do stuff to them to like bump up the compression and like the stroke, and they bore them out and they put like these crazy carburetors on them. But
I think just being able to drive it down the road would be
that's all I'm looking for. I'm not trying to do anything to it.
That's like what I say to Matt. Like, they take their Harley motors and port them and this, and then they blow them up. I'm like, dude, you spent like $6,000 to get your motor, like, you know, just so that you can, like, you know, slip on like a wet piece of pavement and over rev it and just blow it, like, boom, great.
I'm not interested in it. Plus, the thing is, like, it's 70 years old. Like, what am I gonna do?
Have
like,
to go fast.
Yeah, like, Louis' friend has like a 383 stroker. He's like, oh, you want to put it in there? And Louis's like, are you crazy? He's like, it'll twist the frame. Like, it's some crazy motor he spent like $15,000 on. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. I just want this thing to function. I'm not trying to like peel out and like, you know, drag race this thing, you know.
Come on, dude, it'll be like Grease Lightning. You could like, you know, paint flames on the side of it.
No, I can't do that. I gotta pick a color though. I'm struggling to like figure out what I want to paint it.
He sent me a picture. Constantine sent me a picture of what he was gonna do to it. He was gonna go. It was a blue body with blue wheels and a white grill.
Really?
It was pretty cool.
Kinda, like navy blue?
Yeah, I'm gonna send
that's
you guys.
What
that's
what, I was
that's what my neighbor had.
I was thinking of that navy, like a nice navy blue.
Is that 6 volt or 12 volt?
It's already converted to 12 volt, which is good.
Yeah, because my neighbor had one. He had a 6 volt, but is that the same one like the what's his name Trent has there?
He's got a 50. His might be a 53, but it's got a different grill because mine's an F3. Mm-hmm. I think his is an F100 with a different grill, but he put it on like a 1998, like Chevy
Silverado.
Suburban or something like that. Yeah. So it's on a totally like more modern chassis with a modern engine and stuff, which is cool. Like now, since this one has all the original shit, like I wouldn't want to ever do that. I'd want to try and keep it as original as possible.
This is really cool.
His is beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, really nice.
He just commented on one of my posts, and we had been talking back and forth, and it was just funny. Like, I was surprised. Like, never thought in a million years he'd look at one of my posts. Like, I just thought it was funny. Like, he actually knew who I was. But I record every Sunday the Sunday morning news, and he was on it on Father's Day.
Stuff.
Yeah, but I was away, so I missed it. I only record that one, and then it just deletes it because I don't want to have 100 of them, you know? So I just went back and watched it and stuff. And, like, the story behind his book and stuff, it's unbelievable. It's really a cool backstory, so.
Did you guys listen to, he was on Chris and Roy's podcast.
That's right.
It was the first podcast that Trent was ever on was theirs.
Oh, wow.
And it was, like, right when the book was coming out, and he talked about the book. And and Trent sent me a copy of the book, but I haven't even had a chance to read it or open it, but I know the audiobook just came out, so I just downloaded
it's
the
so
audiobook.
Funny. I was going to ask him that.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask him about the book, and then I'm like, you know what? I'm never going to read it.
I'll
never pick it up.
I'm honored that I have a signed copy from him, and it'll be something that I'm sure I'll have on my shelf forever, but I won't. I just can't read it. I can't read it.
I used to love reading, but I just don't have time. But
I'm like, very excited for the audiobook.
Yeah, that's cool.
Dude, shout out to Trent Fresler.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Just those canoes. Like, it's like, and like to think like he didn't know what the hell he was doing.
Right.
Like, that's the it's so crazy.
Right. I know.
You know, it's like one thing to have like basic skills and like bump them up a level, but Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I want to try to build one. I want to be like, I'll see. Maybe I'll make a little tiny one. Cause I could imagine I built
this big.
I could never fit it out of the.
But then make the thumbnail you in it, you know, and then like the video will just be like.
Yeah.
I want to reach out to the company that does the boats that Trent and Jimmy had done and do one of their kayaks. Yeah. I really want to do a Cedar Strip kayak, I think. Because I would never, like, one. Where I live, I would never have a canoe. Like, I'd be fucking upside down. It'd be like this great moment of me being like, wow, I'm in my canoe. And then 2 seconds later, I'd be upside down, like, clinging to life. So it'd be cool to do
like
a kayak.
I'd like to do one just to try it, but like I said, I don't have room in my shop, obviously, to do it, and, you know, but, like, my neighbor did one, and same thing, like, he had some basic skills and stuff, but this came out, like, beautiful, and then when he was just about done with it, he did, like, a dog rescue for huskies, and he literally took the picture of the husky, he carved the head,
something to the canoe.
Dude, I'm like looking at it. I'm like, it's like the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I was like you just carved that on a whim. Like, it's almost like he was goofing with me. It's the most beautiful thing. And he brought it to a show. He won like best in show. And guy's never built anything like that, you know?
Wow.
Some people just, I don't know, they have like just talent for it. I just don't think I have the patience for it.
I like everything that like Trent does, like from his house to his car.
Oh yeah,
he's got a great design aesthetic.
The fences, like just everything is perfect.
Yeah,
it's pretty
crazy.
Cool.
I just don't have that in me. I wish I did. Like, I gotta like do my back hall over, and I'm looking at it. It's like the plaster's hanging off the wall. I'm like, oh fuck.
Just caulk it. Caulk it. It'll be fine.
It's just like, I want to just like put vinyl over it or something. Just something so it's like. Doesn't keep falling. I'm like, I can't deal with this. You know, some people would be like putting up the original bead board again, and I'm like, I don't know. I wish I had that gene or that, I don't know what they call it. But.
Macklin and I like talk about, you know, there's a bunch of houses in Seacliff where the story is that, like, you know, when houses were cheap, friends, like carpenters that lived in the area, would all go in and buy a house together, and they would live in it, and they would just restore the house at their own pace on their free time, and then they would sell the house and then split the profit. But that was like when you could afford to first of all buy a house and then take your time. Like, but that's why so many houses in Seacliff have unbelievable decorative details. And he always talks about how, like, because he, you know, and I think most people that have like the carpentry kind of skill is you have the skill and you have the desire, but you never have the time to do the job that you want to do. Even if the client says take as long as you want, there's still a limit of expectation. So like he always talks about how like he wishes he could just have the time to just do the work that he wants, like make giant decorative corbels for a deck and, you know, buy mahogany and do an intricate railing, but there's no time or budget ever to do that. So it's like, I feel like that time in history is like just gone, unless you buy something in like East Durham and then you take your time restoring it. You know, and there are some houses up there when him and I were up there for the timber framing thing, you know, with those, you know, there are houses up in that area with those huge wooden, you know, hand turned fluted columns and places that are just being reclaimed by the earth and no one cares about. And like, I know. And what's crazy is that now I was telling him when we were up there, like with YouTube, like, you literally could invest in one of those houses and just do that and make it cinematic, and people will follow it and watch it. And you probably could make it really profitable. I mean, look at the guy who did the boat in his front yard, the one that Jimmy's always posting about. The what's the name of the boat? They just put it in the water.
Yeah, the
what's it called? Tally-ho or something
Yeah, Did they put it in the water? I know.
They moved it maybe to a dry dock.
The neighbor was complaining. Yeah, I've been watching that since like the beginning.
Yeah,
I don't.
Paul, do you know what we're talking about?
No.
These guys did like they resurrected.
He's from England.
Yeah, a British like boat from the 1700s, like a huge
oh,
wooden
wait a
vessel
minute. Maybe
in
I
their
did
front
see
yard. Jimmy
like
went
that.
And like hung out with them or something like that.
Yeah, I think the kid came to Connecticut or something like that.
Yeah,
or something like that. But yeah, I'd been watching that like from the beginning, and it's amazing.
It
the kid takes like this.
Four like, years he's been working on it.
Yeah, he took a huge beam of like purple hot, like for the main beam on the bottom,
whoa.
And it's like. You know, it was, like, crazy. It was, like, 12 inches by, like, 24. Like, and he's, like, planing it down. And it just, it's unbelievable the scale of what they're doing. And it, like, comes
yeah.
out perfect. And he's, like, a boat builder from England or something like that. And it just, it's amazing to watch, like, how they do it and, you know, how precise everything is and how much of a pain in the ass it is. Like,
oh,
when
dude.
He started,
it's crazy.
He had to, like, lay it all out on the floor like with these sticks and everything to get the curves right. It was like he basically mapped every point of the boat. It was just so crazy
how big is the boat
everything.
Huge
it's big it's
like, what,
like
50, 40 like, feet
no like 100
100
I think
feet?
It's I just sent you guys
yeah.
the video so
their
he just
yard?
He just put yeah. out it's in his driveway. He just put out a video documenting the last 4 years of the build. And the
hold
beams,
the
like, you can't understand. I just sent Tally it to you guys home. In the group chat. You can't
holy
understand
shit.
The scale of this.
Yeah.
Dude,
the neighbors were complaining, so he ended up having to move. He built a structure over it. Like, 2 weeks ago, he was trying to fix the lead keel, and they re-poured the lead, and it ended up breaking.
Yeah.
And,
oh, God.
It just, the lead went everywhere. Like, they had it contained because they, in case it did do that, but... It's just the shit this kid does. It's like, holy
and then what's
shit,
his plan
dude.
To move it? Get a heavy haul truck or something? And
yeah,
like...
not well. They,
yeah.
The neighbors took him to court and he lost. Like, they broke his balls every inch of the way. Like he was getting Patreon, and then because he was getting Patreon, it was like a paid thing and
made
so
it into a try to claim
business.
It was a business.
Yeah,
yeah
so
yeah,
it got
yeah,
real
asshole.
Ugly. And I could kind of see the neighbor's point because. When you look at it, it looks like it's in a backyard, but from other scenes, it's almost like it's the side. And
I would
like,
be kind of pissed, too.
Help. Well, people come and help, so there's, like, people in and out. And I can see both sides of it, you know what I mean? And it probably looks like one of those projects that will be there forever, you know? It's not it's not going away in a year, you know? He's already into it for 4 years.
My neighbor was building Noah's Ark next door to me.
Yeah.
I would be like, what the hell? He's up making noise. And there's this big monstrosity. Like,
yeah. And
house.
If it's going to
yeah.
be a
like,
year, it's like, okay, but
oh
like, this has been 4 years.
This
and like,
huge.
just the hull is like done.
He built
know?
A building
and,
around it.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
Oh, my
but
God.
It just shows you, though. It just, you know, it shows you, though, like when people get interested in something. And they want to support you, and it's funny. I had done a little post the other day, and I was saying that because, like, I still get like shocked, like when I think about it. I'm at like 6,500 followers and stuff, which is a lot for me. But it's like, you know, I got more people this week to support me on Patreon, and it's like that's crazy. Like these are strangers. Like that's what made me think about it. My top patron dumped me, which I was kind of waiting for it because. I mean, honestly, the guy who's giving me $20 a week. I have no idea who it is.
$20 a week?
Or a month.
I mean, a month.
Oh.
I mean, 20 a month, right?
Holy shit.
Yeah. Still, dude, 20 a month? 20 a month is ridiculous.
That's a lot.
Yeah. That's
I
a
don't
lot.
Even know the guy. Right?
That's a lot.
So after 3 months, I send them something. I can't get in touch with this guy. And I feel horrible because I feel like he did it for like 5 months. And it's like... It's like, that's a lot of money for a stranger to give me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to say thank you to the guy. So, like, I was thinking about it, and it just, like, you know, it made me feel grateful because it's like, it just, you know, I don't know the guy's situation or whatever. So then today on the news, they were showing this, like, it wasn't Gary Vee, thank God, but it was some motivational speaker who's at the Atlanta airport, and he's having lunch, and this guy's playing the piano, and older guy, and he, yeah, they just start chit-chatting. He's like, man, the music was beautiful. It just really, you know, made me feel great, made my day. And So his buddy starts talking to the guy. The guy's like, yeah. He goes, I get up every morning. I got to go travel 4 hours. I get dialysis. Then I come here, play the piano and stuff. So they felt really bad. They're like, wow, this guy's busting his ass working for this. He's like, let's do something nice for him. So he goes on his Instagram Live. He's like, let's just raise some money for this guy to help him out, right? So while they're having lunch, they raise the guy 10 grand. They go over there. They're like, hey, we just raised $10,000. We're going to give you $2,500 now. We'll send you the rest. And the guy's just like floored. He's like, I'm not doing this for the money. I'm doing this because I just enjoy it.
Yeah.
They end up raising, when it just showed it, they raised over $175,000 for this guy, right? And it's nuts. It's like, it just shows you, like, when people give a shit and, like, group up, it's amazing. Like, there's nothing you can't do. And like you're saying, like, that boat, the kid with the tally-ho there, that thing's got a cost. I can't even imagine what it's costing him to build that thing. You know, and, you know, but people, you know, support you. You know, like, if they believe in you and they care, they'll support you, you know. And it is, I was just real grateful about it because it just... You know, like, I was thinking, like, you know, and I even said it in the thing, you know, I made those ornaments, and I'm like, what if I made these and nobody bought one?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, how would I feel? Like, you know, would I feel embarrassed? You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't the case, but, you know, it was just nice to see, you know, people doing the right thing by this guy. But, you know, people are interested in stuff like that, and I get more comments that people are like, you know, hey, I have a desk job. I just love watching you in your shop. It's like my entertainment. I feel like it's my shop, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's fun. And
people just want, they watch the show. They follow, you know, it's a show.
And that's,
I was talking about it the other
night
with some people here, because Sam DIY Huntress and Justin Maybe and Brandy Obey were here, and we were talking about, like, it's the show, right? Like, you're producing a show for people to watch. And I want to just take a second, and Derek, I want you to finish your thought, but on the topic of supporting people, everybody knows our friend Steve Pellegrino, the knife maker, and anybody that doesn't, so like a week ago, Steve was in a completely unbelievable car accident where a tree branch fell through the skylight of his car while him and his girlfriend or fiance were driving. He has a fractured vertebrae in his spine. He can't work for weeks. So if anybody hasn't already, there's a GoFundMe set up for Steve and his partner, Ray, and they've raised about $17,000, but, you know, Steve's not going to be able to work. I mean, he's a knife maker. He supports himself with that. I don't know if he has health insurance or not, but anybody that has, you know, any ability to help Steve out, we're going to leave a link to the GoFundMe in the show notes of this episode, and just go and drop anything that you can in there. I'm going to put together some stuff here that I can, like, kind of, like, auction off on my Instagram. Just, like, a bunch of shirts and a hat and, like, just my random shit. And all the money's going to go to Steve and his partner. So on the topic of supporting, just keep that in mind, that Steve is a helpful guy, and he's a good dude, and he definitely could use our help for something that was completely – you know, could happen to anybody. Like, talk about the odds of that happening.
That's what scared me about my back thing. Like, this was, like, so out of the blue. It was like if I didn't have insurance and I was, like, dependent on this, like, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like, that's scary that something could happen that fast and change your life, you know?
And yeah, he's in a neck brace, and, you know, I don't know if you guys saw, but he posted the CAT scan of the fracture in his vertebrae.
Yeah.
And it's like, it looks like a fucking broken egg. It's like,
cracked.
And I texted him, I was like, holy shit, dude. And he was like, yeah, the doctor said it'll heal on its own, but I just can't do anything.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you do?
The problem is, too, it's not like it's a broken arm and it's going to heal and he'll be fine. Like, he's going to have neck issues forever.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, he, you know, it just,
it was in his,
you know,
neck
affects
too, right?
So many things. And then it's like, depending on where it is, it could affect.
Angela
his...
told me it's
holy,
like, up
shit.
Here.
Do you know what,
like,
number
it is? Well,
C6.
Yeah,
if
so
something...
that affects your hands.
Yeah.
Because the nerves for your hands go through that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could have been paralyzed his whole body.
He's lucky that he's not paralyzed, but.
Oh my God.
At the, you know, it's like, you know, now he has to sit around in a neck brace and think about, you know, what the fuck he's going to do. So any and all will be helpful for Steve. And Steve hasn't asked anybody for anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like he's sending out texts like, hey, guys, help me raise money. I don't think he would ever do that, but no. He deserves all of our help. So whatever anybody can do. Yeah, it's fucked up.
He's such a good guy. And like I said, it just, man, it's just, talk about life-changing quick. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, it's scary. But, no, it just, you know, like I said, I just wanted to finish and say, you know, the whole time I was in New York, people were so supportive of me, saying, oh, we love what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, keep please posting. And I knew I wasn't putting out anything worth any content, you know. And then I get home, and I'm like, oh, as soon as I get home, I'm going to hit the ground running. And then this kind of happens, and I feel bad. You know, I feel bad. Like, I feel like I owe people something, you know, because it's like, you know, people are busy. People don't want to see me, you know, cleaning out, you know, tools out of drawers and stuff. But
no, but they do, because then it motivates them. They're like, oh, I got to, like, start cleaning stuff out. Because that, when I saw your thing, I was like, man, I got a lot of corners like that.
Yeah,
I got a lot of corners with just, like, random just shit. Stupid. It made me happy to see you, like, going through, because I know you have a bunch of reorganizing to do for some new stuff that you got, and it's like, I'm like, all right, he's doing it. I was, like, psyched when I saw that you were working on it.
But the part that kills me, it's like, I have, like, I'm looking at it now, and I just get so overwhelmed. Like, I have so much wood that's, like, decent wood, and, you know, somebody said, just make stuff with it and get rid of it that way, but it's like, that's not going to happen. But I have, like bundles of, like, wooden balusters, right? And I'm like, nobody's going to use those. Like, they're outdoor, I believe. But they're, like, you know, it's, but they're not fancy. They're just, four-sided. But it's like, what am I going to do with those? Like, you know, they're not really good for anything. And it's, you know, I mean, you can make something with them. But I'm not, you know, everybody uses vinyl for, like, outside. And so, you know, you're not going to use them for that.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Love to get a shop. I kind of was like mentioning to a buddy of mine that's got a welding place here, the welding supply place, because I know he's got like a little extra room there. But I'm like, I don't know if I want to get involved with that. You know, I got, you know, college tuitions I should be paying towards, and you know, if I could make more money doing it, maybe. But just right now, I think if I could just, you know, restructure what I have here and be more efficient here. You know, I have a bandsaw I'm getting rid of, and I just got to make some room here. You know, I think I have the room. I just have to utilize it. So.
Oh yeah, think about when you were buying the CNC. Like, I remember the conversations when you were like, "I found this CNC, I'm going to buy it," and it was like, "Could you?" I feel like a year before that, you would have laughed if I said, "Hey, there's going to be a 4x8 CNC in your basement." You would have been like, "Yeah, okay, whose basement?"
This thing's in here.
It's
funny because I was thinking of maybe making it like a 4x4, and you know, Bernie Solo, he had mentioned that, but it's like you could use it just as good as a 4x4, you know, like if you had something long, you could just have it hang out. And then I was thinking maybe I make it like a 4x5, and then I could put my you know, the fourth axis in it and stuff. But I'm like, you know what, the amount of work to do that,
like to limit your machine.
Yeah, it's just, like I'm saying, I'm going to gain a couple feet and it would take me forever to take this thing apart, you know what I mean, to reconfigure it. Like, it's not as simple as just, you know, it's
like Legos.
It's got to be all taken apart, reassembled. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know what, my back wall will be replastered before I do that.
Yeah.
So.
And well, it's good having a 4x8. I mean, you know.
Yeah. No, it is. It's nice having the room on it. I get plenty of storage for stuff, glue-ups.
I know, right? I mean, even my CNC, it's only 2x4, and when it's not being used, it's like where I work on my laptop.
Yeah,
like, I stand there, and then I'm like, ah, shit, I got to move it.
It's a great flat spot.
Yeah.
That's
what I've been working on, just to transition back to that. I've been teasing it, and I just posted it on my Instagram, but I've been working on the solid aluminum guitar. Shout out to Luke Smith, who did all the fusion work for me and figured out how to do adaptive cutting and clearing. And I'm amazed at
whatever
how
that
machine, dude, the machine is handling the aluminum like as hard. And because the whole thing was, I made tool paths in Vectric, and they were 13 hours each tool path. He got it down to an hour and a half to do the whole thing.
What was the difference?
Well, so Fusion does what's called adaptive clearing. So, like, it will ramp up. So it'll do, like, it'll go in fast and then it'll slow down. And it just is a more effective clearing. Vectric isn't made for that kind of work. So I was just going to let it, like, take its time. I was like, fuck it, I don't care, I let it run all day. But Luke was like, no, we could do it way better, yada, yada. So he worked on it. And, I mean, this thing is flying through this aluminum, like cutting pockets that, like, you see on, like, real like CNC machines, like, and it's encouraged me, like, you could make motorcycle parts on this, like, all day long. Like, and the craziest part is that all they did was super glue the aluminum down to the table. There's no clamps. Like, it's just glued to the table. And the, you know, there's some
once
chatter,
you get the
but,
right
you know,
speeds and everything, it's amazing what you can do with it. It really is.
Yeah, and there's some chatter, and you know, people commented on my last post about it, like, oh, you could, you know, you could have done this, and you'd get a better. And, like, I, you know,
can the people stop?
Like, enough.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Like, and it's like, did I ask in the thing? Did I ask in the post, like, hey, could anybody give me tips on how I could get a better surface finish? Like, I could give a fuck about the surface finish. It's just the fact that I'm making a guitar out of a billet of aluminum is that's the goal here. That's the key.
The guy, I think you mentioned him once before, Breaking Taps, I think his channel is.
Maybe.
He does a lot of, like, I think he's got an Avid, and he does a lot of like aluminum stuff, and he'll, like, machine a piece, and he'll be like, okay, this is this end mill at this speed and this speed, right? And he'll do it four different ways. In some ways, it's got, like, a beautiful finish. Some, it's, like, a good finish, you know what I mean? But it shows you, like, you might cut it that way. I might cut it this way. We both got the same result. Like, your finish might have been a little bit different looking or whatever. But it is amazing how different you can, like, you know, feed the stuff through there and get it to cut, you know? And that's why I'd like to try some stuff like that with mine. I got to just... that's why I have to get that dust collector in here. I want to surface this whole thing again. It really needs to be surfaced. Avid sent me a drag knife, but I really don't want to use it because it's, you know, my table's so screwed up. But when I tried surfacing it with my dust collector here, it was just
freaking
disaster. So I got to wait till that other one. I get that, and maybe in the next week or so, and... you know, do it with that, because that's the way to go. But
I think you know, I think that, you know, what Luke has been doing a lot of aluminum and brass milling on his Shape Oko, which is, like, you know, it's like entry level of him, and he's done no upgrades to it. You know, like, he hasn't done, because some guys, like, buy, like, stiffeners and Winston Moy. He's just, like, out of the box, and he's done really good work with it, and he's, you know, he's got the kind of engineering brain where, like, when we were first doing the trial runs, he made, like, six pocket paths to make, like, a 1-inch square, and he had different everything's, different approach speed, different depth, and it was right over my head. Everything he was saying, I was like, dude, you could be fucking speaking Greek. I have no idea. Yeah. But he was able to get it down to the point where, like, you can just hear it in the machine that it's, like, not dying. You know, like, you can hear that the machine is cutting well, but then, like, I was saying to you guys before we started, two nights ago when we were doing it, we just, the chips, what's so crazy is I'm cutting an 1.75-inch deep pocket a slot, excuse me. So, like, cutting the profile of the guitar, it's 1¾ inches deep with no coolant and no, like, air blast, like, pushing the chips out. So, eventually, we just basically welded a giant chip to the thing, and then the bit, you know, bit broke and everything. But the bits are, like, $15. I told him. I was like, I'm fully invested in spending, like, $200 on bits. Just when they're done, they're done. I don't, you know, it is what it is. It's really for the experience of making the making the aluminum guitar. So thank you to Luke. Shout out to Luke and his expertise in the fusion. But just, it is really complicated.
I just got some bits yesterday. I bought them on Amazon because I just, the other place I was going, I'm not going to throw them under the bus because they're really good. It just, the price, I couldn't justify it anymore. But I bought some 1/32nd
Oh my God.
And mills there.
Are they from SPE Tools? Is that what you're buying? Because that's what I've been buying.
I don't know. I don't know where they're from, but it, I hate them like they're on 1/8 inch you know, freaking shafts. It's like, it's just so small. But I just, like, get blown away. Like, Jimmy milled that whole thing out of aluminum with that, you know?
Yep.
And those are so fragile. Like, when I have them in my holder and I reach over it and I bang them, they break right off. You know, they're like just crazy. I broke a couple bits yesterday, and it's just so frustrated. I've been trying to do this sign for Doug Artfully Brogue.
Oh God!
Four times this sign, twice. So I did.
Didn't you send him one?
I sent him two, and they both came back.
Oh, no.
The sign's costing me money.
I was going to say, you spent enough on shipping to lose money.
That was the first sign I ever made that didn't need to be touched up, nothing, right? It came out perfect, everything. Not a speck of dust on it, nothing. And when I put the hanger on it, I don't know if I didn't drill the pilot hole deep enough, it cracked. So I said to him, this is back right before I was leaving to go to New York. So this was, you know, 4 months ago. I said, I'm going to send it to you, and, you know, I'll send you a replacement. No worries. So I send it. It comes back. It was street, and it was supposed to be road. No, the zip code, the last two numbers were transposed. He's, like, in the line or whatever. Then I send it back. It was, like, street, and it was supposed to be road. So I got it back a second time. And so I made the sign two more times. And then yesterday, I make it, and I close my file, and I had to change something, and I didn't change the CAD or the CAM, whatever, which is which. So I had all the G code, but I didn't have the picture. So now I'm like, okay, so now I got to hope everything's where it was, where I thought it was, because now when I cut it, of course it wasn't. It was off by a tiny little bit, and it broke the bit instantly, and the part that sucked is I had another sign I was working on, and that one was off too, and that one got destroyed. So I have no more MDF. I didn't buy any because I didn't want to carry any. And so now I basically just surfaced both of them, and I gotta try to cut them again. But it's just a pain in the ass. But, you know, that's the way it goes. It's, you know, you take the good with the bad. You know?
That's right.
It just
that's you know. CNC. Well, it's so funny. The other night, so, like, you know, a bunch of people were here, and Luke and I, because I told him I wanted him to be here when we tried the first thing on the guitar, and everyone was just sort of hanging out. Brandy and Justin were in town filming Sam, and I was like, all right, you know, like, let's try it, and we'll hang out in the other room, you know, we can listen for it, and we're just bullshitting anyway. So we go to try it, and then, like, the Z height's wrong, and then we lose the Z limit switch. Then I probe again. And then next thing you know, me and him are spending an hour just troubleshooting back and forth, like, what's wrong? And then we don't realize that the zero is supposed to be the table, but we're zeroing off the material and, you know, all these different things. And then everybody there is kind of like looking, because none of the people there are CNC, have any experience with CNC machines. So they're all looking at us like, is it even worth it? You know, like, and I'm like, no. Like, we just have to, once we get it going, then it'll be easy. Yeah. But it's like, well,
yeah.
It's not easy. No part of it's easy.
It's like when you golf and you're, like, driving the ball into the woods, and then, like, on the 18th green, you know, get it in and, power it. And it's like, I'm going to come back again, you know, and that's how it is with CNC. It sucks when it sucks, but when it's good, it's good. And, you know, it's just, and, like, a lot of it's just self-induced, you know, like, you know, I'm telling a buddy of mine about it, and it's like, you know, I made the mistake of not saving the file after I changed it, because I moved it to try to fit two on one piece instead of doing one at a time. I'm like, I got to do two, so I save time, and it ended up blowing up in my face. But I should have taken the time. I should have saved the file after I changed it, and I didn't. So, you know, I'll remember next time not to be a dumbass, you know?
That's why I stick with Plasma. Nothing ever goes wrong. It's so easy. It's just one line.
Yeah.
There's no heights. Yeah. There's no depth of cut.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's what it is. It's just stupid, you know, mistakes. And it's funny because, like, a lot of times when Jimmy CNC's, he's so particular about everything, and it drives me crazy. I'm like, oh, he is such a worrywart. But you know what? I mean, he does break stuff, but, you know, that's why he's like that. Because you have to be, like, hyper-focused on what you're doing and, you know, what you're cutting. And, you know, every time I try to cut multiple things, if I don't save them all together, like, what I do is I'll have three different files, and I copy them and drag them together, and I have them separated on their own board. Mm-hmm. So when I put them on mine, it, you know, they should be separated. But what happens is, you know, I screwed one thing up and it's off a little bit. So when I put them, go to cut them, they're off a little bit or something like that, because I, you know, relied on something I shouldn't have, and it screws up. You know, if it's off by, you know, a 16th of an inch, it, the whole thing's ruined. You know, by the time it goes 4 feet across, it's ruined, you know. So, whatever, lesson learned, won't happen again.
That's been what's nerve-wracking about the guitar thing is that, like, so we broke a bit, and then Luke actually was able to, like, take the path and just kind of go to the next step. And then when I was doing the profile around the outside, we broke another bit. But it's 1¾-inch thick aluminum, so I was left with about 1 inch of aluminum. We cut about 3/4 inch deep when the bit broke. And I was like, he's like, well, you could leave it and you could bandsaw it out. And I was like, dude, it's 1 inch thick across, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, that would just suck. So then I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, maybe there's a way to do it. And I just said, you know what, let me just put a new bit in and just let it run. And if the whole thing winds up being like a little bit smaller or whatever, like, it is what it is. And luckily that machine, because it's on ball screws, it zeroed back to the exact same spot, and it was fine. But even still, we wanted to be conservative with it, so there's still 3/8 inch of aluminum on the bottom of that, which I would have to cut with a bandsaw. And I'm thinking about just taking my bit and lowering it and just running the path again and just seeing if it gets it done. Because I'm going to use a woodworking bandsaw, but even still, it's going to take a long time to cut.
You're going
to
gum up some blades.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I've already kind of, you know, resolved myself to just, you know, the cost of the project. You know, like, it's just the blades, like, just throw it in with the rest of the shit. I don't know. The whole thing's going to cost me $1,000.
You're going to polish
it? I think I'm going to do a mirror polish for everything.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I'm going to mirror polish the body and the neck.
I was just watching this kid. He freaking mirror polishes the bottom of pontoon boats.
Oh, God.
I'm like,
oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
Freaking not. I'm like, they're not even like fancy pontoon boats, but it takes them like a day or two to do it. So people probably pay him, you know, $1,000 or whatever. I don't know what it costs to polish the pontoons, but I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe. I mean, they do look pretty cool.
It might help with corrosion because
that's what I'm wondering.
Less
but
surface
he,
area.
But he doesn't do the whole thing. I shouldn't say he doesn't do the whole thing. The one I watched, it was three pontoons, and he just did, like, the outside of one of it and the back of it. So I don't know, maybe he does do the insides and stuff, but it just, he goes, you know, through the whole process and stuff. But I was like, wow, that is, like, of course, like, he's all black, his face,
God,
from the shit, you know what I mean? I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
But
I don't
tough
like
way
all
to
that.
Make a buck, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
there's a guy like that on Long Island who we had spoken a few times because he was going to take a welding class with me. And he does, like, big rig polishing, so he'll polish, like, the fuel tanks and the wheels.
Yeah.
And he must make a good living because, I mean, he's constantly busy, and he uses these, like, big Makita grinders with these big wheels. And when he's done at the end of the day, he's completely black.
It's like he'll pull down his shirt.
That can't be good for your
skin. But he wears a respirator, and the chemical goes
into your skin.
100%.
Yeah,
100%. Like my uncle, who's a firefighter, said, like something they, like, firefighters used to do is, like, you'd leave your gear dirty because it was kind of like a badge of honor. Like, you wouldn't, like, clean up all your gear, like, because, I don't know. But, like, the new, I guess, like, maybe the new guy had all the new gear that wasn't dirty.
Yeah,
like,
you don't want to be the guy on the job with clean work boots.
Exactly.
That's
you don't
want to
be the guy on the
job
with the brand new spud wrench that's not a little bit bent and scratched up. But they said that they require them to now because they learned that the carcinogens stay in the, like, on the clothes.
The material,
and when you sweat, it goes in through your skin.
You can't win. It's that I gotta tell you though, Paul, you gotta get one of those VersaFlow hoods use with your waist belt. Like they're only like $250 because even when we were doing the lion sculpture thing, I mean, you could buy the whole kit. It's just like another $1,700 that you gotta spend. You already have the filter pack, you know. It's
I'll make some type of adapter like you did.
Yeah, exactly. But so like when we were doing the lions, I had to grind all the spot welds, you know, basically that Matt did, and I did it outside. But even still, while I was outside, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna be out here all day, 10 hours.
It keeps you
just
cool.
Grinding.
Your face, it's
exactly.
Like cool
so
air
I put the thing on, and I, you know, had my. It has the earmuffs built in, and I just, you know.
Oh, that's nice.
I, you know, I had my headphones on underneath it, and I was listening to music, and you're in your own little world. But at the end of the day, you don't. You can tell that you haven't been breathing in fucking grinding dust all day.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it, and it's, and wearing a respirator, especially if you have any facial hair, I mean, Derek, you can't wear one at all, you know? So like, I think that, it's just about kind of getting yourself prepared to wear one and just knowing that it's like on a hook and you just put it on and then, I don't know, like when I grind inside now, like I never want to not have that thing on.
Yeah.
You know, like I never want to wear a full face respirator again. Cause like, why would I want that, like, sweaty, like, nose pressure when you can wear the thing and you can, like, feel normal? I don't know. It's definitely worth it. I feel like everybody need one of those. The one that Jackman has is cool, too.
I was just going to say
Peak Safety
that.
One.
He uses it all the time, you know, on the show. And, you know, it was pretty cool. You know?
Yeah, I tried to get one of those from them, but it was during COVID, and they were like, like, can't do it. They're expensive. The one that he has is like $500, but I think his is even Paul, do you know the one I'm talking about?
I'm trying to look it up.
Powered respirator, but instead of having the battery pack, it's on the head of the respirator.
I'm trying to find it.
It's like $500. I think it's really cool. The power cap.
Yeah.
Power cap active respirator.
$495.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's. I mean, honestly, you could buy that, and then you don't have to jerry rig anything. You know,
that's true.
Yeah. I was thinking of getting one of those because I'm real bad without ever using anything. I just sometimes say to myself, you know, I'm 52.
Yeah,
it's gonna take 10 years to get to me, and they'll treat me for 5.
You know what you do? Just
you
take your beard and push
like
it up
70.
Over your face.
Yeah.
You know, and then like that's enough.
Like, I'm doing, like, when I was 20, like, if I lived to 40, I'd be happy, you know? I'm like, if I lived to 70, I'd be happy, you know? But I'm sure when I'm, like, 68, I feel differently about it.
Mm-hmm. I know.
But, what was I going to say? Dude, what is up? And everybody, I can't even share about it anymore because everybody's like, oh, you need an air dryer. It's the condensation from the humidity. Mm-hmm. There is way too much water in my compressor.
Okay.
What is up with that?
It's the condensation in the humidity.
I understand that. No, I get it. But do you have an air dryer in yours?
No, I need one.
A powered air dryer?
No, just any.
I have like a shitty one, but it barely works.
Well, like you get the filter, like the canister filters, right? And then there's an air dryer. An air dryer is like
it's basically
a refrigerator.
At the pizza parlor, we have air dryers, right?
Yeah.
For our tools.
Yes.
And to do the things. But
to flip the pizza.
Yeah,
better,
no.
But,
so
pizza.
I have one on the line that goes to the laser.
Yes.
The thing is like filled with water, filled with water, right? The other one, I don't think my compressor's on. If I spray it, like... There's one thing to get moisture out of the line.
You
get
out water.
You
got a water gun.
I'm like, am I hooked up to my water line because it's copper pipe? Dude, it's ridiculous.
Oh my god.
Like does the coiled hose make it set? Like,
There was water, way too much water.
Do you drain your tank? I never drain my tank.
No, I never drain my tank. But I drained it maybe 2 months ago. Well, I haven't.
You're supposed to drain
it
like once a week. I never.
No, I know, but I haven't used it in a while. But I mean, I drain it and I get like a little bit of water. Like sometimes I'll get it like pouring out or whatever. But I'm like, it's a real, real old compressor. So I don't know if it's that style, like makes more water or something. Like I get the whole thing with the humidity, but there's way too much water coming out of this thing.
So funny.
I don't know.
Yeah. Did you guys see what you saw? What House of Chop made with like the
yes.
the
yeah.
pipe?
Yeah.
Apparently
yeah.
that works pretty well. I have one of those.
Dude, his stuff's too neat.
Yeah,
his shop's too neat.
Yeah. He's like Mike from Veteran Woodco. Dude, when Mike came to my shop, he was like, he literally was walking through it like with his hands up. He was like, dude, there's like moldy coffee cups and like just garbage everywhere.
Mike's friggin' shop, it's like, it's cleaner than most people's kitchens.
It's cleaner than my house, 100%.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But, so I have one of those air dryers that's like an actual unit that you plug in and it's got a filter and it's got like R34 cooling in it.
I need
that. But it's first of all, they're super expensive. They need maintenance. Yeah. The filters have to get changed, and they're drying the air, but they have to run constantly. So like, if you're in a shop like mine, where like my compressor only gets used when I run the plasma table and when I like blow something off. Like, I don't want that thing just on all the time.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And then you still can generate condensate in the lines while you're not using it. So it's kind of like a thing that you either have to be using all the time or not. And they don't use a lot of power. It's literally like running a refrigerator.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, then the question is like, is it right next to the compressor and then the lines run off from that? Or is it close to the tools? Because your plasma unit, like your plasma unit should get the driest air that it could get.
Exactly.
That's like the big thing. So like, you should at least have like a couple of those like filters, you know, by your plasma unit. But I don't know, dude.
I was going to buy, like, one of those Harbor Freight ones, but is it worth it? Like,
yeah, no, they definitely help.
I have the small glass ones, but
get the biggest
buy the
glass
one with
that
the
you
canister.
Can get. Yeah, you can get, the biggest glass one you can get is good.
But, like, I couldn't find the beads there, so I was like, oh, I'm not going to buy it, you know?
I bet thing House of Chop made works better than, like, any of those little cheap filters you can get.
Oh, yeah,
100%.
I just don't have the room.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm wondering, though. It's like, because, like, I have another line. So, the line comes into the house. It, one goes to the, I don't even know. But anyways, so this line that's beside me right here, this one is the end of the line. And, like, really nothing really comes out of that. This one, I think, is the second one. And so, that's why I don't understand why I get so much water out of this. I get nothing out of this. Like, it, like I said, when we're done recording, I'll spray it and show you. Like, water comes out of it. Like not a mist.
Maybe
water.
You have, like, a low spot in the line
crazy.
Somewhere.
That's what I'm wondering.
And the water is collecting.
Because it's a copper pipe, and then it hits, like, a coil tube. And that's what I'm wondering. Like, maybe it runs down and it fills into this tube or something.
Yeah.
Like, this is where it condenses.
Like,
yeah.
It's literally water coming out of
it's
it.
It's so funny.
It's
so
like
funny.
I can't even use it anymore.
Yeah, and it's so bad for your tools. It's so bad for, like, I mean, you don't use a lot of like air tools, Derek, but if you use like air powered like grinders and shit, like it's so bad for it.
I know.
I just got that Paul kind of saw it when he was here, but I just got that draw bar thing for my milling machine.
Yeah,
so
I like
it's like a butterfly wrench. But even that, like, it's on the other side of my shop from where my compressor is. And it needs a lot of air, and I'm noticing because I have, like, you know, like every fitting restricts your airflow. So I have like four fittings between my compressor and that, and it almost like doesn't have a lot of like give to it. You know, like it doesn't have a lot of juice. And I noticed on my other drawbar feels kind of weak. So now I got to go through the process of like running a dedicated like hard air line across my shop.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, fuck, I don't have time to do
that's
that
crazy,
shit. But I don't know. Anyway, what have you guys been watching?
Dude.
Oh, boy.
I've been watching the craziest thing, so I haven't been able to do much. So this is, it's JCS Criminal Psychology.
Oh, boy.
Right? It is crazy. So they, very well-known cases, like, they had, like, the Parkland shooter, the Casey Anthony. The guy basically just takes the interrogation room video, and he just goes through it and just tells you, like, you know, like he'll pause
it
and be
like,
oh, you know, this person doing this is because of this. dude, I can't. I watched them all. I just mm-hmm. watched them all, and then it recommended this other one, like a CBS thing up in Canada, about this guy that he was a serial killer and like sexual assault, but he was like mm-hmm. the commander to their like Royal Air Force, and the way they caught this guy was so crazy, and they show the interrogation, and it was just amazing to watch. It was like, but yeah, it's almost like the video is just the interrogation room, so there's really not much to watch. But yeah. So I've been listening to a couple of them, like a podcast type thing. Mm-hmm. But one of them, it's amazing. This guy, he shoots somebody in self-defense. And, you know, like they always say, you don't talk to the cops. And this guy, basically, because of talking to the police, is spending 30 years in prison. And it wasn't really justifiable, but at the end of the day, it's like, it could have been almost justifiable. So, I mean, it's good he got caught. But mm-hmm. the guy was just so ramped up thinking he was going to get beat up. He shoots this guy, and then like they go through the footage, they break everything down, and it basically the guy he shot was basically turning to run when he shot him, and you know, it just it's just really crazy to watch, but I just find it interesting. But that's what I've been watching.
So. Interesting.
Yeah, if you're into morbid shit, there you go.
Well, I've been listening to interviews
great maker recommendations.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I've been like totally dived into these like World War II Normandy veteran interviews are like just crazy. Like listening to like the guy who was driving, you know, like in the first scene of Saving Private Ryan, the boats,
dude,
the carrier boats.
I can't believe I'm looking for a video that I just watched. I wonder if it's the same one. Go ahead.
I just watched. It was a video of an interview with a guy who was driving one of those boats with like the troop carriers, and he was talking about how like the first boat when they opened the gate, everybody just got slaughtered, and it was so bad that they couldn't close the gate back up to go back and get more troops because there were bodies blocking the gate. And he's like, and you know, this is and at that time, I mean, like, the world
was it 19?
It was Normandy. It was D-Day.
Normandy. Okay, yeah. My grandfather stormed the coast of Normandy.
Yeah, kid. You know, he was 18. But you know what was crazy was he talks about how when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, he said that as soon as it happened, he said his dad, his father, sat him and his brothers down and said, "You're all signing up," because they were Italian. He said, because this country is the greatest country in the world, and it can't fail. Like, this is the only place in the world that you could go to and make a life for yourself. And his father fought in World War I, and he was like, when you're 18, you're going to go and you're going to sign up. And all of them, like, he said that the rallying cry to sign up to join the war in Europe and beat the Nazis was so intense that at a certain point, the U.S. stopped accepting people because so many people were volunteering. They were giving cities quotas, so they would go, they would stopped all the enlisting, and they would go to New York City. They said, okay, we'll take 1,000 people, and they said there'd be lines outside the recruiting office to be one of those 1,000 people. People wanted to go so badly. People were, and this guy said he tried twice to enlist when he was 17, and they caught him both times, and he had to go back and wait, and they just said, just wait until you're 18, we'll let you go when you're 18. So it's just, it's crazy. The recounts of World War II are,
it's funny. Watch them. It's funny you said that, because last week of sitting down, I don't know if it was on YouTube, but it was the Battle of Sugarloaf, it was called. And these guys, they went there, and I think there was 6,000 guys in the battalion. And over the course of a month and a half, they tried 11 times to get up to this hill, and they couldn't get it. They left with 60 guys.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And the problem was the kamikaze pilots were bombing the plane, so they had ships in the port that were giving them support.
Yeah.
And if they left, all the guys would have got killed. So they stayed, and they made a decision to stay and say, you know, we're going to have guys dead here. We're going to have guys dead here. It was the most horrific thing to watch, and these old-timers recounting it, I was crying. I called my son and I says, "Have you ever watched this shit in school? Like, are they show you the stuff?" I was like, "You need to see this. Like, you need to see what these people went through." It was the most amazing thing, and to see these guys recount it, like in their 80s, it was just like, it was unbelievable. It was the Battle of Sugarloaf. I just remember because it was there's a ski mountain, Sugarloaf, up here.
Yeah, Sugarloaf.
And it was talk about like a different time, and you know, just it just really
really sad, but yeah.
Yeah, one of the guys, there's an interview with this guy named Tom Rice. He's a paratrooper. My grandpa was a paratrooper in World War II as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of these guys are, it's a little harder to kind of hear their story because they're just so old and they just the way they speak, it's hard to understand them. But some of them, you know, this guy's like 90, 97. When he was 97, he re-parachuted back down into Normandy.
Oh, my God.
Or 95. Wow. Now he's 97. But he speaks so well. It's an hour long. He talks about jumping at Normandy. He remembers the dates, the weather, and the time. He'll say, okay, June 11th, 1943, it was about 12 o'clock. We flew over. We missed our first drop zone because of tracer rounds. We jumped on the second. And he remembers everything to such incredible detail. It's, like, amazing. And it just, you know, what's crazy, too, is that these guys didn't live these, like, long, storied war histories after World War II. They were all overseas for, like, not to belittle it, but they were only overseas for a year and a half or 2 years. Yeah. Then that was it. They came home, and then they all became, like, regular people. They were teachers or lawyers or whatever.
I was going to say, a lot of them are just so successful because that's when, you know, like, they would step up and, you know, do like the GI bills and help them buy houses and like such like pillars of the community.
Yeah,
like, that's I remember my grandfather. He stormed the coast of Normandy and he got a field promotion because like his lieutenant or whoever, colonel, I don't know the ranks. I wasn't in the military. Got killed, and you know, he never spoke of the war, and it wasn't, you know, you just didn't do that. But I remember as a little kid, we'd go to the air base in Bedford to, you know, buy stuff because he used to shop there. And they would get out, you know, they'd take everybody's ID, check it. My grandfather would go in, and they'd come out, and they would salute him. And I used to think it was, like, the coolest shit. Like, you know, he was, like, king shit, you know, because even retired, they still saluted him, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But it just, that's definitely a different time. But it's
crazy. Totally crazy. Anyway, I've been watching a lot of those. There's so much of it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And there's just like really great, you know, well-produced interviews, and there's not a lot of like, it's not like a movie, you know, it's not cinematic at all. There's no pictures, nothing, but you're just, so you don't have to watch them. You just listen to them.
Yeah.
I'll put a couple links in the thing. So,
yeah.
Paul, what have you been listening to?
I don't have anything as good as that. Yeah. I mean, that's,
do you have anything where people live?
Yeah. I was watching
Tom Dillon.
Before
Tim Dillon.
Did you see Mr. Beast's new video he just put out?
No.
It just came up on my thing yesterday. It was out for 5 hours, and it had over 7 million views.
Oh my God.
If you can carry $1 million, you can have it. And it's actually a great video. I don't really watch his videos.
That's crazy.
But I just looked at it before we started. It had like 12.2 million views or something like that. But he just gives away money in such funny ways. And he was at a restaurant, and the waitress, they said, you know, as much as you can balance on your little tray, you can have. So everybody in the kitchen's watching. So he had a room with all crumpled dollar bills. He brings everybody from the kitchen there, right? And they stuff in the bags. And so the manager calls one of the employees and says, you know, where are you guys? And so he gets on the phone. He says, if I send them back with a bag of money for you, would it be okay if they, you know, get this break? He goes, yeah. So he takes a bag, stuffs it. You know, it's a big sack, and brings it back to, gives it to the guy. But just the views are ridiculous that guy gets. Just crazy.
Yep.
So,
I mean, it's, you know, it's spend money to make money, right? I mean,
yeah. So
he can basically tell us, he can tell a sponsor like, hey, listen, give me $1 million and I'll make the video worth your while.
Yeah.
You know, so like this $1 million got 12 million views. That's like TV companies spend that kind
of
money on
like
bullshit
ads. He never gave away the million. I mean, a lot of people got 20,000, 30,000.
Yeah, but I'm sure he gave away a couple hundred thousand by the time he was done.
Yeah. So.
And his production is like one guy with a camera, like a shaky, like no lights. Like it's like bullshit.
He had two guys, and they were carrying around 25 grand in a backpack. It was like 10 hours.
You better be careful, like he doesn't get robbed.
I'm sure he's got.
Oh yeah, he's got to
have security.
But
like, apparently he's like, obviously he's super smart, but he's like a genius, and every single thing he does is like super calculated.
Did you see the interview he did with what's his name? Casey Neistat. It was a couple of years ago.
Oh, maybe I did.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was real good.
Real good. But yeah, you're right. He is super smart. Everything he does.
I've been watching this podcast called The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler. He's a comedian. But he did this series with Joey Diaz, who's one of my favorites, and they basically chronicled his entire life, and they're still going. They've done 12 episodes, 2 hour long episodes, and they're still going. And it's funny when you said, Chris, how the guy who stormed the beaches of Normandy remembered every date and the time and the way things happened. This is exactly how Joey is, obviously with completely different stuff, with more criminal activities. But he's 1982, the summer of 1982 is about June, and then he'll tell you what he did. He just had a wild life. But there was a lot of tragedy in his life. His father died when he was a little kid, and then his mother died when he was 16. He was out on his own, and he got into a lot of bad situations. But he's so funny, and I've never even heard of anybody
what's
with
the name?
Stories like him. It's the Honeydew Podcast with Ryan Sickler. But if you just type in Joey Diaz, Ryan Sickler, it'll pop up. And Ryan's a great interview. He's a really funny guy. He's got a funny laugh. But I watched the whole series, and I think they just came out with one last week.
Mm-hmm.
And they started from when he was born. Now they're I think he just might have moved to Los Angeles in the last one, and when he became a comic, and then he was in Seattle, and then he moved to LA. But it's interesting to listen to. He's hysterical.
I'll have to listen to it. I'll put it in the notes.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/handmadepodcast. Check out Derek from Alden, patreon.com/Derek from Alden.
Uh-huh.
Check out Paul Pinto's new truck coming to an Instagram near you.
Yep, pretty soon.
And don't forget to subscribe to everybody's YouTube channel. And one more time, check out the link in the description. Support our friend Steve Pellegrino and his partner, who could use a hand, and put your money into something good. Thanks for everybody listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.